the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
So what is happening to cryptos in 2022? Cryptos are down nearly 50% since their peak of November last year. Some analysts seem delighted at this news, tweeting, "I told you so," to their followers. Actually, Bitcoin and cryptos have been through far worse in the past. Writing off cryptos has become something of a fool's errand, since they're always capable of springing a surprise. You never know what's around the corner with cryptos. So to discuss this, I am joined by Sean Saunders of Revix, Marius Reitz of Luno, and Gianluca Sacco, otherwise known as G, of Valor. Thanks very much for joining us, guys. Okay, I want to, first of all, welcome you. I would say Happy New Year. It is the start of the new year. This is a whole new year for cryptos. Can I ask you each to respond to the issue I raised in the intro, why cryptos are down 50% since the beginning of the year? And if we could start with you, Sean, if you could answer that first.
Oof. So there's loads of, I guess, answers that can come in here. I suppose you're seeing general risk off, right? I mean, you've seen increased interest rates potentially in the US. That means that you're seeing a lot of money moving out of tech stocks. Crypto seems to be pretty highly correlated with sort of the tech stocks. And yeah, I guess it's been, you know, it's been a bit of a slide over the last few weeks, but we seem to have found a bit of a bottom. And then you've had just general profit taking. I mean, it was a year where the crypto market grew over 75%. So I think just a bit of profit taking, you know, more generally speaking, is also a good thing there. And, you know, we're just part of this market cycle, right? Crypto goes in these cycles where you see these really big booms and then there's pullbacks. And I think that's really what you've seen now.
Gianluca, if I can put the same question to you, why are we seeing cryptos down so much since November last year?
Yeah, I think a lot of what Sean said makes a lot of sense. This is a market that's had a really, really hot 2021 overall. Like many assets that are currently in the top 10 are up like 100x, right? So I think it's the expectation for assets to just go up forever. It's not probably not a reasonable one when you're looking at the crypto markets. And so you'd almost expect, right, after like a really, really hot run in many assets that you'd see a little bit of a pullback for probably quite a few reasons. I think a lot of what Sean mentioned are some of the reasons. I think I'd also highlight that the Federal Reserve in the U.S., speaking about tightening and increasing interest rates, probably leads to a little bit of, traders saying, hey, let's take a little bit of risk off. Let's have a look at reducing positions in risky assets. And crypto currently, unfortunately, is no exception to that, right? So you would have seen a little bit of sell-off, at least most recently, in response to that kind of mumbling from the Fed.
Maria, same question to you. There's two out of three. Are we seeing cryptos behaving much like you would expect to see tech stocks in the United States, you know, stocks like Tesla and Apple and Amazon?
Kieran, yes. I think I echo the sentiment shared already. I think volatility is the ongoing theme for Bitcoin and for the cryptocurrency markets. So I think it's really been, as weird as it may sound, nothing out of the ordinary. We typically see pullbacks of between 30% to 50% after an extended period of price, you know, price increases. So I think Bitcoin is down 40% over the past 3 months. So it's still in normal territory. I don't think we've entered a bear market yet. I still think we are in a longer, you know, term bull market at this point. So it's normal activity, and perhaps again just a reminder to everyone that the crypto market is very volatile. Right, so don't risk more capital than you can afford to lose.
Yeah, Sean, I saw that Revix put out a newsletter maybe yesterday or this morning saying that we're not in a bear market. Maybe just outline why you say that, because a lot of people are saying we're kind of at a crossroads. This could be the beginning of a bear market, or could just be we're hitting a bounce point. Maybe expand on that, what your view is.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, if you do look at the crypto market, I mean, we have seen a big pullback. There's no denying that. Bitcoin's still up roughly around, in rand terms, at least 7% year on year. I mean, the top 10 cryptocurrencies, as measured in our top 10 bundle, I mean, that's up almost 72% over the last 12 months. So to sort of say that we're in a bear market when you are seeing sort of that year on year return, I mean, it's a bit odd, right? Sure, we've seen a big pullback from the market top. But, you know, as they always say in crypto, sort of zoom out, look at the bigger term picture here. And that's really, I think, you know, sort of what I'm looking at. And that's what most of the people within our team are looking at as well. And that's the narrative, really. I think, you know, a lot of people look at crypto over a very short time frame, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months. But the real narrative here is over the last 10 years. I mean, this is the top performing asset class, regardless of sort of which period you decided to enter. If you entered a year ago, you're still up. If you entered 5 years ago, you are really up. If you then were one of those really early adopters, you're smiling. I mean, you've invested in the top performing asset class, arguably of all time. And I think that's really the narrative when we're saying, let's look at the potential of the crypto asset class when we look forward. I mean, the industries that it's looking to disrupt. I mean, you're seeing the evolution of the financial system right here. I mean, that's really exciting. How big is the financial system to disrupt? I mean, not however big the crypto market is now, what's it, about $2 trillion? I mean, it's many multiples of that. So that's sort of the narrative that I certainly get behind when we look at this space.
All right, G, I want to just change gear a little bit. 2021 was something of a watershed year for cryptos, right? It was a year that cryptos went mainstream. Institutions started to show it love, for the first time, really started to show it love. And some really interesting crypto projects went public. What, in your opinion, were the highlights of 2021?
Yeah, it was a really interesting year. I think some highlights in my mind, and there were many, to be honest with you, I'd start off with this narrative that ran through much of the year, and kind of the darling assets of 2021 were alternative layer one blockchains that had kind of smart contract capability of some sort. So I'd speak of Solana, Avalanche, and a couple of others that were kind of vying for the throne of being able to build like programmable blockchains and potentially blockchains of really high speed and throughput. We've kind of found, if you think back a little bit further to 2020, there was this boom in DeFi. Ethereum was the blockchain on which a lot of the action was happening. And throughput on Ethereum got like, it's not significant, right? And so you saw that the fees to transact on the Ethereum blockchain skyrocketed. Lots of people were priced out of participating in DeFi. And 2021 kind of people, I think, took stock and thought to themselves, like, this sucks as a user experience right now. So what can be done differently? And you saw alternative L1 blockchains that were much higher throughput gain at least momentum in terms of price, I'd say. And in terms of like product development as well. So like lots of interesting projects being built, things like full order books in a decentralized manner that's not linked to a centralized exchange, kind of built on chain. And it gave us a glimpse into what like 10x increase in throughput on blockchains might look like. Right, so I think that was the first thing that was really, really interesting. The second, I think, is growth in dollar stablecoins. So at the start of 2021, we were looking at something like $30 billion in stablecoin circulating supply. By the end of 2021, there was $140 billion. So like that's a notable increase, right? Growth.
Yeah, just explain why we saw that growth in stablecoins.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, stablecoins and specifically USD has become kind of the quote asset for the crypto space in many applications. It's the asset that everyone rebalances back into and like prices everything in, right? So like many applications in decentralized finance, especially where like people are going to look for yield, you could get pretty good interest rates on dollar stablecoins versus traditional USD. And so I think a big part of that is just like people minting new USDC. And other dollar stable coins to go and chase yield. I think other applications is like almost in the payments field where dollar stable coins can move a lot more quickly than traditional fiat dollars. And it's just like, I mean, to those who actually use it, it's pretty obvious that this is the future, right? Like these things move in fractions of a second for very, very cheap transaction fees on some blockchains. And that kind of drove. I think another element of this, just to wrap up on dollar stable coins, is there's set, like dollar stablecoins that are backed one for one by dollars in a bank account, and then there's under collateralized versions. And we actually saw quite a lot of growth in the under collateralized implementation of dollar stablecoins, which would like kind of relieve the centralized risk on custodians of these assets, which is really, really interesting. And so something to watch there is something like Terra UST being the stablecoin asset over there. And then finally, I think the last thing that was really interesting was the growth in NFTs, of course. So we've seen this like really new, weird part of the crypto space that's got very little to do with you know, betting on the next big blockchain, but rather like these unique assets that are representation of art or fashion, and people really, really jumping on board. I think this, like, NFTs opened up crypto markets to a much wider audience of people that otherwise just wouldn't be interested in the space, and gave artists a way to kind of monetize their art in a new fashion that kind of expands beyond borders that were previously set up, I think. So I think those were a couple of really interesting things in 2021.
Okay, for people who are not familiar with cryptos, we're going to cycle back to a few concepts there, like DeFi, decentralized finance, stable coins and yield, and the kind of yields that you can earn in the space. But let's come back to that. Marius, I want to tap you for a second there on your highlights for the year. What really stood out for you in 2021?
Kieran, I think 2021 was the crypto industry's biggest year to date, not only from a price perspective. We spoke about price increases earlier on, but I also think from an ongoing adoption perspective. I think we're starting to see cryptocurrencies value in emerging markets. We saw glimpses of that in Nigeria last year, businesses, individuals turning to cryptocurrency do payments, remittances because of a scarcity in hard currency. So that was an interesting use case that started to develop in Africa specifically. We saw El Salvador becoming the first country globally to adopt cryptocurrency as legal tender. That's going to be an interesting almost experiment that will follow very closely over the course of this year. And then I think up until last year, most of the attention has been on cryptocurrencies itself. But in 2021, we saw the IPO of Coinbase, one of the biggest cryptocurrency platforms globally. And I think that's shifting the attention from pure cryptos to the massive complex businesses behind these projects. And I think it's done, and it's going to do. Apologies. A lot for trust in the industry, Kieran, and it should provide comfort to lots of potential investors to taking that first step into the cryptocurrency market. And then lastly, institutional adoption was the main theme over the past 12 months, but it's also become easier for retail investors, individuals like us, to access cryptocurrency, to get exposure to cryptocurrency and price increases, price movements without actually opening a crypto wallet and holding crypto. And so that's done by the introduction of Bitcoin ETFs. We saw the first future-based ETF launching on the NASDAQ last year. And again, I think interesting development to monitor over the course of 2022.
Okay, Sean. I think some of the things that we're picking up here are that there are a bunch of real business cases that are developing or use cases behind cryptos. And Bitcoin in itself, the adoption, we've talked about ETFs or exchange traded funds, the first futures based ETF launched last year. This is only going to accelerate. And of course, it does provide some sort of demand underpin for Bitcoin. But I mean, I want to get your sense of where you see the big trends happening this year. NFTs, this is a remarkable development. And I think a lot of us, people paying millions of dollars for, a graphical art image. But of course, what it is doing is it's creating a whole economy around digital art that wasn't there before. So this is something new, and you can never write that off. And also decentralized finance, the business case behind Ethereum and Solana and Avalanche and other projects like this. Talk to me about what you think the big themes will come out in 2022.
Oof, there's a lot of exciting themes. And I like the smirk, by the way, when you mentioned NFTs, because, yeah, I think as we said earlier in the webinar, right, I mean, the space is weird, right? I mean, there's no denying that what's going on here is novel, and it's at times very speculative, right? I mean, seeing digital pixelated rocks sell for millions of dollars, like, is that rational? Probably not, right? But it is sort of laying the foundations of what the NFT space is, how I at least see it, how it's going to evolve, right? Which is that you'll have digital blockchain-based ownership of assets in the real world as well as in the digital world, right? So you've had, Malta as an example, they've gone out and they've put all their land title deeds on a blockchain, right, on the Ethereum blockchain. And that can be applied now to every other industry, right? You could have vehicles that could, you know, exist on blockchains. So that's a real world item that then sits on a blockchain as well. Essentially, all of those are NFTs. So whether or not it's a digital artwork, whether it's a tweet, whether it is a car, a house, you name it, like these are unique items that can be placed onto a blockchain. And that really then utilizes a blockchain for what it's good for, right? I mean, being able to sort of have immutable record of something, right? And that's really the important part. And then when you have a transaction that occurs later on, when you look at selling a house or selling a car, I mean, it's on a blockchain, right? There's no central registry where something could be corrupted. But I think if you look ahead at sort of the big trends for this year, I mean, Marius mentioned this, institutional adoption is just something that I'm constantly in awe of. I mean, just this last week, I was sitting with one of the major banks in South Africa, and I sat around a room of really remarkable people, and all they could speak about was how they could get crypto in the hands of their customers. So, you know, there is interest there. You've seen PayPal, Cash App, I mean, Facebook's tried as, or Meta, sorry, has tried as hard as they can to launch their own stablecoin. They haven't yet got that right. But, you know, there's so much interest across the board in the crypto space. I only think that's going to accelerate. DeFi has a similar sort of feeling, at least to me. I mean, I come from a traditional financial background, but it has a similar feeling. And certainly when I deal with some of my old colleagues, as what XRP had in the early days, right? Like, you know, a lot of sort of crypto skeptics early on were like, I love XRP. I get that, you know, they're trying to disrupt the Swift system, but I don't really get the rest of the crypto stuff. And I'm seeing that same sort of application now to DeFi, which is incredibly exciting. I mean, I'm a bit of a finance nerd, and like the DeFi space is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And then you've seen the emergence of Web 3.0, the metaverse. I mean, all of these things have crypto as a commonality. So, you know, I think the maybe the last thing I must just mention is sort of regulation. I think this is something that, you know, we are going to see more of going forward, right? You've seen recently this last week, India come out. They've sort of proposed a unique regulatory system for cryptocurrencies as well as a unique tax. You've seen Thailand do something very similar. Russia seems to be a little bit more in support of mining within within their borders. So yeah, I think the regulatory sort of discussions will continue, and hopefully we'll see some regulations in South Africa. And that's definitely going to be a major trend.
Just before we go on, Sean, just maybe, what is Web3? Just explain that.
Web3. So Web3 is where we go from having what we know today as sort of Web 2.0. And I can go through the history, but I think just to save time, really, you've got websites that you can go onto today. They can be a little bit engaging, right? You can go on and you can maybe order, let's say, an Uber through an app or something like that, right? And you can then get into an Uber. But everything is sort of like, you know, it's interactive. It's 2D. A Web 3.0 is not necessarily moving to a 3D, certainly not. It can be, though, through the metaverse, I guess, in the future. But you're looking at an internet that's far more decentralized, a lot more private, right? Currently, information can be tracked. Your IP address can be tracked. Ads can be served to you based on your interests and all the rest. Web 3.0 sort of takes your data and says, well, no, this is yours. You have the right to earn rewards for this data that you're sharing with other parties, not necessarily the likes of Alphabet, you know, Google or Facebook and all the rest. I mean, that's a very simplified version, but it's sort of the evolution of the internet, sort of democratizing access to the internet as well as the security of the internet and improving that. I think those are sort of the main trends.
Right. And of course, there are some coins that are built around the Web3. So you've mentioned Web3 as being one of the trends to watch, NFTs being another one, institutional adoption. What do you see the big trends to look out for?
I think this industry is now getting so big that it is actually like impossible to keep track of everything. And I agree with everything that Sean said, plus more, to be honest with you. So I think scalability continues to be a key trend this year. We're probably going to see increased adoption of layer 2 technology built on Ethereum. Stuff, you know, that helps to increase the throughput on the Ethereum blockchain, something that's been a bit of an issue that I mentioned earlier. I'm pretty excited and watching that really, really closely. That kind of interfaces with a multi-chain world, a world in which there are many blockchains on which people transact. And the question that's raised when you think about that is, well, how do these different blockchains interact with each other, right? And so cross-chain bridges between different blockchains, also something that's being built today, very interesting. You would have probably, and some of the listeners would probably have seen that there's been interesting developments in these cross-chain bridges very recently. Like there's been recently actually a hack on Wormhole crypto, which is one of these cross-chain bridges. And that kind of highlights for me very quickly that all of this stuff is just so new and experimental. that there's still a high amount of like risk in here, in the sense that this is all beta technology, right? This is still early stuff, and it requires a lot of refinement, but it's groundbreaking. It's like, to Sean's point earlier, like DeFi and many of these applications, it's just like thinking up finance from the ground up with new principles, with like advanced technology. It's really exciting stuff that maybe we can spend a little time getting into if we do have a little bit more time. I think the last thing is, or a couple of other things actually, sorry, very quickly, I think dollar stablecoins continue to grow. Like that market cap probably continues to just accelerate, in my opinion. And finally, decentralized autonomous organizations, or DAOs, that can be used to govern protocols in the crypto space, is something that people who are much smarter than me spend a lot of time thinking about. And it seems to be that it's primed for some interesting developments in that space, in trying to organize basically institutions that are decentralized, that operate on a blockchain.
I want to go to Marius, and just Marius, get your take on what should we be looking out for in 2022?
Kieran, if we look back over the past five years, we've made tremendous progress as an industry, you know, on many different fronts, from compliance, regulation, access, you know, become easier for the average person to dip their toes into cryptocurrency. But I think we're still largely in an asset phase where most first-time buyers do so from an investment or speculative perspective. So I do think that in the coming year, we will probably see a spot Bitcoin ETF launching in the US. I think the market is becoming so large and sophisticated that it's imminent. And I think that's firstly, access for retail customers will become easier. Secondly, central bank digital currencies, I think, is an interesting new theme that has developed over the past year or two. We saw the Central Bank of Nigeria launching the eNaira project in November last year. I think the intention behind it, financial inclusion, to address people being excluded from the financial system, and also to develop cheaper payments. So that's yet to be seen. I think central bank digital currencies is an interesting development to bridge the world of traditional finance and decentralized finance. So it makes the concept of a digital currency probably a bit easier to understand for the average person. So I think that's something to keep close eye on. And then lastly, the other guys touched on that is regulation. Again, I think the market is becoming so massive that regulators are being necessitated to actually now take first steps and move from position papers into putting regulations in place. So locally, we expect the Financial Sector Conduct Authority to provide further guidance to cryptocurrency platforms such as the three of us in terms of how we will be regulated going forward. And also globally, globally there's a global theme of regulators. Rumors in the US that regulators will try and fast track regulation, and we ultimately saw the Libra project, so to say, going under over the past week or so, mainly because of disagreements between crypto companies and the private sector and regulators. So I think that bottleneck will have to be resolved over the next year or so, if we want to move crypto's mainstream over the next year.
Great. Thanks for that, Marius. Okay, so a question coming in here from Tion. It is a claim that NFT is merely a hyperlink. The cost of storing art in the blockchain could be too expensive. Any views? Does anybody want to take that up?
Ethereum is clunky right now, right? I mean, 90% of NFT projects are running on Ethereum. It might even be a little bit more. And yeah, gas fees on the ETH network are really high. But this is sort of the early days still, right? I mean, Ethereum has become a victim of its own success. So will Ethereum be this clunky in the future? Probably not, right? I mean, you've got Avalanche, you've got Cardano, you've got Polkadot, you've got Solana, all these cryptocurrencies looking to become these blockchain superhighways where all these applications are going to be built on top of and NFTs stored and all the rest. You're going to have all these projects that are going to be built across these platforms, and they'll probably, these will be blockchains that are interoperable as well. So they'll be able to talk to one another. So I think scalability, it's just a function of time. We will be able to, scale these different blockchains. The cost will come down materially, but it is going to take some time. I mean, at the end of the day, cryptocurrencies are protocols, i.e. they are software, really. right? So these different protocols go through upgrades. I mean, we've seen Bitcoin go through multiple upgrades. Ethereum is busy going through a big upgrade to a proof of stake network. So there's a lot still to happen here. So I think, you know, this is really the start of NFTs. Right now, we've known NFTs as being little digital art. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be condescending, but, you know, there's sort of been this bubble in the crypto market, in the NFT space in particular. And, you know, we're not going to be knowing NFTs as digital art forever. I mean, this is definitely going to bleed over into the sort of music realm, into the more physical world as well. So I think that's, yeah, again, that's just something that will happen probably over the next few years.
Nobody's mentioned, from memory, gaming coins. Gaming coins have been doing quite well. Talk to us about that. You've got a bunch of really interesting projects coming up there. The metaverse, people buying real estate in the metaverse. And I mean, people might sort of roll their eyes at this. You know, what are you doing? You're buying a bit of space on a computer somewhere. Is there any depth to that market?
It's interesting, right? So gaming is almost like the next extension that you'd imagine from profile picture NFTs. So like what's worked in the past is that like your representation of yourself in the digital world can be a profile picture that is an NFT that you own and can provably show that it belongs to you. And like for that I'm quite excited about, to be honest with you. I think like the prices are in a bit of a bubble. But at the same time, this is something that just didn't exist really in the past. For me to say that this profile picture is one of one and it represents me to some degree, right? It's a weird concept to think about. And to be honest with you, like the spaces where really smart people disagree and argue a lot is generally the place where there's interesting stuff happening. And I think that's true. As it relates to gaming, we've seen that like some large gaming houses have made signals that they want to enter the NFT space. We've seen backlash from their customers saying that, hey, I do not want NFTs put into my gaming experience. All I want to do is play the games that I play. And I think a lot of the like reason for that is that like gamers will view the production houses that build video games as just profit taking, right? They'll think of them as if they're going to try and shoehorn NFTs into a game, they're trying to take more money out of my pocket. Maybe to some degree that's partly true, but there's a lot more to this than just that. I think we're seeing like full video games themselves being built on blockchains as well, which is quite interesting and just builds almost like a monetary layer into software that previously just didn't have this. Right. So imagine cases where you're playing video games and there's this native token that you can earn for doing so if you're really good at that. So I think gaming is interesting. I think like digital representation of physical goods, I'm not too sure about myself, but potentially is also an interesting space. And that the NFT space is going to continue to find interesting applications, as Sean has mentioned.
I mean, some of these gaming coins, they did, the last time I looked, they were up, you know, some of them more than 10,000%, I think. Yeah. This, of course, is what makes this talk about bubble so very real and pertinent to a lot of people. You know, when you see kind of gains like that, and, you know, what is the use case? What is the business case behind that? Decentraland and Axie Infinity and coins like that. But yet, that is one of the big growth, projected to be one of the big growth areas for blockchain development going forward. Would you agree with that, Gene?
I think so, to be honest with you. Look, again, TBD, right? Who knows? Like this could all go up in smoke if it just doesn't have adoption from users. But I can totally see a path forward where users kind of come around to the idea that my games can include both like rewards in crypto form and incentives for like hardcore users, people who are power users of these applications, and almost gives back something to them where previously they would receive very little benefit from engaging in this kind of art, right? Or this pastime. So I do agree. I think that there's opportunity here. I think like if we think about price action, the reason that these things were up 10,000% is that like at the outset, no one believed that this would work, right? That this was interesting at all to look at. And that's kind of where you see massive price increases, is where there's is it's non-consensus views. It's something that just doesn't make sense at the outset, and then people gradually come around to the idea that that these applications make sense.
Marius, I want to swing back to Bitcoin. Bitcoin dominance, it's an interesting measure of the general state of health, if you like, of the crypto market. And a few years ago, Bitcoin accounted for 98% of the total market cap of cryptos. Of course, now it's down to about 40%. It does tend to swing and sway, and it could come back up again. But what is this telling us about the general state of the market, the fact that Bitcoin is worth less than half of the total crypto market now?
Kieran, I think it's healthy. We're seeing traders rotating from Bitcoin to other coins because of potential, better return on investment. But what we're also seeing is that during times of market turmoil, some traders see Bitcoin almost as a type of reserve or safe haven crypto. So during times of turmoil and markets dropping, you'll see Bitcoin dropping, less than compared to other altcoins. And I think we saw it this time around as well. Of the top 50 coins, all 50 closed in the red, and Bitcoin did the best with a 25 or 30% drop. So I think as we continue expanding on the asset, the asset use case for crypto as a store of value as well, as I said earlier, most first-time buyers enter the space by holding Bitcoin. And on Luno, 70% of first-time buyers, invest into Bitcoin, right? So I think that's a good indication that Bitcoin is still the most popular from a mass market perspective. And also, when we're starting to see more crypto products being built and listed, like ETFs, you'll typically see Bitcoin ETFs being the first instruments to be listed and to be offered to the public. So I do think it's part of the cycle, Kieran. As we see new speculative coins, becoming available, you'll have speculators chasing those coins and chasing the prices up. But during times of sideways movement and times of with the prices dropping, you will see Bitcoin gaining dominance. And I think we saw that over the past week or two. Bitcoin dipped below 40%. I think it was 35-36%, and it's up to the mid-40s again. So I think Bitcoin can be seen as the US dollar of the fiat world to some extent.
Right, the granddaddy of the crypto world, Bitcoin. Staying with you, Marius, a question here from David. He's asking, will Luno introduce more coins like Shiba in 2022? Shiba Inu.
Yeah, short answer, yes. TBD whether we will introduce Shiba, but we will definitely look to introduce new coins this year. And I think just as a guide, We will probably look to offer the top 10 coins, if you look at the CoinDesk, top 10 index, more or less. So we'll definitely be adding 4 to 5 new coins over the next couple of months.
I'm not sure if Shiba is in the top 10. I think it's in the top 20. But of course, it's one of these meme coins. It doesn't really fulfill any function at all other than just being a lot of fun, like Dogecoin. But I have a feeling it is in the top 20. All right. Sean, I think I'm going to – this is from Musa. He's asking a question about Web3, actually. Do you think once Meta introduces its coin, it will make the Web3 skyrocket in some sort? I don't know if you feel that you can answer that one.
I think I can, because Meta isn't launching their coin anymore. Silvergate, actually, who was the bank that was working with the Diem project. I mean, it went Libra, then became named Diem and all the rest. That actually got purchased yesterday, funny enough. So recent development there. So Meta is no longer pursuing their own stablecoin. Silvergate Bank, which is sort of the biggest crypto bank in the world now, if I'm not mistaken, listed company as well, they are pursuing their own stablecoin project. But I don't think there's one sort of stablecoin to rule them all. Different stablecoins work slightly differently, right? So you've got UST, which is different to USDT, which is different to USDC, and then there's BUSD. There's all these different stablecoins that exist out there. They have different mechanisms of proving that they have the reserves, so they've actually got the dollar assets somewhere, either in a checking account or in short-term T-bills or something along the lines of that, or they actually use other assets as collateral. So DAI, which is a fully collateralized or over-collateralized, actually, stablecoin, that doesn't have dollars. I mean, this acts like a dollar, so DAI acts very much like USDT or CUSD or TrueUSD, but it doesn't have dollars essentially backing up the value of that $1 worth of DAI. It's actually got Ethereum and, you know, multi-DAI then uses a whole bunch of other assets. But I don't want to go down that rabbit hole too much. But the stable coins that, you know, making up more and more of the crypto market over time, I mean, we talk about a trend being Bitcoin's dominance declining over time. Another trend, which, you know, not a lot of people talk about, and G did mention it though, is sort of the stable coins growth. I mean, gosh, like you look in the top 20 cryptocurrencies, you know, you've had UST come in there recently. USDT has just grown year on year. USDC has just grown as well. So there's a lot of interest in stable coins. You know, there's loads of benefits as to why you would like a stable coin over a traditional currency. You know, you can act and transact with this cryptocurrency 24/7, 365. You don't rely on sort of banking times. Transactions happen instantaneously. You don't have to wait on payments and you don't have expensive SWIFT fees. So yeah, there's loads of benefits. But I can continue down that rabbit hole. I'm going to pause there. I don't know if there's any other questions around Web3 there that I can tackle.
Right. And in fact, you did touch on a question. This comes in from Fahim, and he's asking, will the demand for new stable coins increase in 2022?
I would be so surprised if there isn't an increase in demand. As the crypto market grows, you're going to need to have sort of on-ramps into DeFi, and you need to then have, you know, there's a big part of this market which is trading focused, right? And traders need to trade against some sort of a stable asset. And stable coins make up that stable asset. So as the market grows, stable coins come in. So I do think that the stable coin market will grow massively. And you'll also see a lot of the stable coin issuers, like Circle as an example, they are sort of moving forward to become sort of fully regulated institutions right now, but they're actually moving to become banks themselves. So I think it's only a matter of time that you've got essentially banks that are issuing their own stable coins. And I mean, is it really that far cry to start thinking about the likes of a Standard Bank, FNB, you name it, issuing their own stable coins in South Africa? Yeah, at this point, probably. But I think we would have said the same thing about El Salvador adopting Bitcoin as legal tender and everything else that's happened in the crypto market over the last 12 months.
Right. And of course, there are a few RAND stable coins already in existence. I mean, XR being one of them. G, if we can come back to you, because you touched on stablecoins a little bit earlier, maybe explaining what an under-collateralized stablecoin is. And is that something that should alarm us? Because the USD Tether, USDT, is the largest stablecoin that there is. It's, I think in the crypto rankings, it's about number 5 or number 6, somewhere around there. And yet it is, there are suspicions that it's not very safe or not 100% collateralized. Maybe just explain why that's important.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So I think the distinction to draw are between assets that are intended to be 100% backed. So something like USDT, the intention is that there are sufficient dollars in a bank account to redeem all USDT in existence. I think, like, to touch on a little bit of the concern with USDT specifically, I think they've done more recently, they've done quite a few audits to prove the reserves that they hold. Not all of those reserves are held in straight up dollars in a checking account, but some held in like long dated bonds and some other like interest bearing instruments that are not like cash equivalents, but not actually physical cash. And I think many have taken offense to that. on the other hand, there are certain stablecoin assets that the intention is to see whether an under-collateralized stablecoin can work in the wild. This is much more fringe, much more, I think, experimental, and potentially, like for many in the crypto space, they hate the idea of an under-collateralized asset. Bitcoin is the ultimate bearer instrument, right? It's an asset that you can provably say you own one Bitcoin if you've got it in a wallet. And there is absolutely no under-collateralization of that asset. It built into the technology, it's not even possible. Whereas, like for certain of these new stablecoin assets, the idea is that there is some amount, in some instances, there is some amount of assets that back the value of a dollar stablecoin. And then there is a mechanism to try and force that asset to stick to its peg of $1. And that's either through buying back or issuing new units of that stablecoin if it deviates from its peg. I think that's kind of the high level explanation of one version of this type of asset. There are many different implementations that people are testing for under collateralized stablecoins, and it's something to just like observe, I think, at this point, and just see how that plays out. To be honest with you, by far and away, the largest stablecoin assets in issuance are fully backed and collateralized assets. Something like USDT and USDC account for a significant amount of the overall asset base of dollar stablecoins.
Right. I mean, it is a fascinating development. The fact that you have these, they're not fiat currencies, they're not dollars, but they are facsimiles thereof. And you can trade with them and a lot of places, even rand stable coins. You can purchase goods, I believe, in China and places like that with rand stable coins, because they can be converted into cryptos very easily or into any other dollar stable coin. We're running out of time here, but I want to have a wrap up to talk about what each of you are doing for the coming months in terms of development. Before we get to that, there's a question here from Vincent, and the other questions, I'm sorry, we're not going to get to. One has got to do with tax. Alan, we're going to get back to you on that. I think tax requires its own special podcast. Vincent is asking about crypto arbitrage. Is there value in it given the current market level, and how does it work? Okay, that's also quite a detailed discussion. Valor announced this week that it's pulling out of the crypto arbitrage market. OVEX, which is another company, probably the biggest, they pulled out of it a few weeks ago. Others, however, see opportunity here. And people like Currency Hub and Future Forex, they're staying in it. But maybe very quickly, G, just explain why you're moving out.
Sure. So we sent our communications to all customers who expressed interest in the Valor arbitrage product this week. We're exiting that space, which is a small part of the Valor business because of updated requirements from our banking partners. So we are going to be winding down that part of our business through to the end of this month. And I think opening up space for other providers that have fewer restrictions on them, I suppose, to enter the space further. One last thing I'll mention on this is that we care a lot about serving our clients and offering the products that they love using. And we are in discussions with a number of alternative providers to see whether we can recommend that clients move on to any other crypto arbitrage provider that will give a similar level of service.
Okay. I mean, a lot of readers, MoneyWeb readers write to us, they're a bit disbelieving, that people can make 2% pretty risk-free. It's not that there's nothing risk-free. There's always risks attached to it. But the whole purpose of arbitrage is to try and eliminate those risks. But is it legitimate? Yeah, it's legitimate. And is it legal? Yeah, it certainly is. I think a lot of the banks don't like it. They see money going out. They don't necessarily see the money that comes back in again when the profits are banked. But it still exists, and there are still providers out there. Okay. Marius, if I can go to you. First of all, give us a sense of how your business grew. I mean, you put out a press release a few months ago saying that the number of clients, and this is extraordinary, is up to 9 million worldwide. This is a South African company which has gone global, and you're now part of a much larger group based out of the United States, and your ambition is to grow your client base to 1 billion. Tell us how far along that track you are.
Kieran, thanks. We passed the 9 million customer mark last November. I think we've almost reached 10 million customer mark. And I think the significant part of that is that almost a third of the 9 million customers only signed up over the past year. So I think that demonstrates the growth that we've experienced in the cryptocurrency industry over the past 12 months. Revenue's mission is to upgrade the world to a better financial system. That's no easy feat. We will do that by making crypto accessible for the average person. So for us, in order to reach that lofty goal of 1 billion customers by 2030, is we need to have the best team in place. So over the past years, we've grown our team at Luno employees to 800 across our global offices, with a sizable chunk of the 800 still being based in South Africa, which I'm very proud to say, because we were founded in South Africa. If we want to reach more people, we need to expand our footprint. So we're also on a mission to be one of the most widely recognized and accessible cryptocurrency brands across the world. So for the coming year, we will look to take Luno into new regions, as of Monday this week, Luna is available in the US, in New Jersey. So people from New Jersey can open Luna accounts. And we'll be looking to expand Luna across the US as well over the course of the year. Africa is interesting. So we're hoping to expand our footprint across East Africa. We're already active in Uganda. So we think it's a promising region. And then, as we said earlier, I think we initially, Bitcoin was the only and the dominant crypto for quite a long time. We wanted to keep things simple, as you know, magic internet money, as many people refer to crypto, can be quite a complex topic to grasp and to fully understand. But we think the time has arrived. We now have access, and we've got new cryptocurrencies offering different use cases and providing utility to consumers. So for that reason, we will be looking to add 4 or 5 new coins over the course of this year, and give our customers access to more investment options through new coins. So and then I think lastly, which is sometimes an underrated topic, is regulation. I think that's super important. We are operating in this hybrid environment at this point, where people still use fiat currencies, the dollar, to transact, to invest into assets, to save, to borrow, and to perform all of the traditional functions that you would, perform through a bank or financial service provider. And we think that people will use cryptocurrencies in similar ways. So people will use it for payments, they will invest, they will save, they will borrow and lend. And so we're evolving into this hybrid space. And I think critical to that is the introduction of regulation, because a lot of people, institutions, still sit on the sidelines, watching the market, watching it grow and the use cases develop, but they're not able to participate. So we're investing a lot of time and resources into positioning Luna in certain markets so that we comply with local regulations, so that we comply with, so that we approachable and we are, we provide consumers in those markets with comfort. So examples include Malaysia, Singapore. We're doing a lot of work in with the coming regulations there. But then, of course, in the US, which is a very, very complex country with many different local nuances. So a combination of these factors, Kieran, will hopefully help us to reach our goal by 2030. And hopefully I'm still around then to experience that.
Okay, good. All right, Sean, tell us about your year. Did you have a good year? And MoneyWeb readers will be very familiar with, your top 10 bundle, and you've also got a payments bundle and a smart contracts bundle. Are you going to be introducing more of these?
We are indeed. And sorry, I'm just going to come back to what Mario said there as well, right? So Mario, you said if you're going to be around by 2030, I think this is the case of, when you're in the crypto space, you're aging 4 times as fast as, the normal person. And then when you're in the scale-up / startup space, you're aging twice as fast. So, you work that out. It's a ride. But yes, we're going to be launching a variety of new products. So we've got sort of 2 single cryptocurrencies that will be launched later this month. That's Luna and AVAX. Then we've got a DeFi bundle that we've got coming later this year. I mean, our job at the end of the day, much the same as Luna and Valo as well, is that we want to simplify the process of investing in crypto. But we are very investment focused, right? We're not really trying to move into sort of the payment space or anything like that. So if you want to get exposure to a crypto theme, whether that is, say, the metaverse, NFTs, Web 3.0, maybe staking, all of these areas, we want to just make it a lot easier for everyday people to get exposure to these themes within the crypto space. So those are the different products we're looking to launch later this year. We've then got some savings vaults that we're looking to launch. Those will be in South Africa and internationally, much the same.
The MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related
and the Middle East. So, as soon as I find a little bit more time in the day or the ability to sleep faster, we'll be sort of putting our foot down on the accelerator on that. So that's quite exciting. We had a phenomenal year last year, as I'm sure the other crypto platforms did as well. I mean, we grew 1,200%. There was a bit of sort of a pinch yourself moment towards the end of the year. And I'm really excited about what the space has to hold. Maybe the last thing I'll mention as well in the world of Revix is that we're going to be launching a variety of traditional theme-based products, the Revix platform. When I say traditional theme-based products, our customers come to us because they want to invest in a specific theme within the crypto space. Maybe they want just broad-based exposure to the crypto market. They buy our top 10 bundle. Maybe they want to invest, as you mentioned, in the smart contract space. They can buy a smart contract bundle. But a lot of customers have come to us and said, well, listen, we're who love to invest in, say, medical cannabis, AI, space exploration, genomics. You know, you go through all these themes that people can invest in, and we really want to be able to offer those. So in addition to the crypto we have on the platform. So I'm really excited to be able to launch those a little later this year.
Wow. Gee, what about you? Excuse me. Did you, can you be 1,200%?
Not sure. I need to go run the numbers, actually. I think I need to go run the numbers. But it was a bumper year for us as well. I think it has been our best year yet in 2021. Over 110 billion rand, I think, in aggregate value traded so far to the end of 2021.
Wow.
We shared over 70 million rand with our customers in rewards and rebates to date by the end of last year, and saw significant growth in our customer base as well. We're always humble in the fact that we've got a long way to go. This market is still small, and we've got the whole world to go and red pull into the crypto space, I think. But we're quite excited for some similar aspects, which includes international expansion. We're also looking to take Valor to new markets and hopefully serve customers to the level of quality that we expect and that we love giving in South Africa. We think of, as in the exchange space, kind of two distinct pieces, right? The first is make it really easy and usable for the day-to-day user. That is a massive use case in itself. And then there's also this like crypto infrastructure piece, which is, you know, for others that might have really good ideas for building products in the crypto space, why shouldn't Valor be the infrastructure on which they build that? And that's a really exciting piece that we're building out and already have started to make movements into. Functions like sub-accounts we launched last year. We're continuing to refine that in the coming year. We're going to be expanding into a number of other improvements to our product set on the exchange and expanding into other interesting products in the crypto space also related to yield. And I think the last thing I'll say is probably like the thing I'm most excited about or proud of actually in the last year is the fact that we, like something that you don't see often is the service that's given to customers. And I think kudos to our client service team. They've done an excellent job of making sure that our customers are looked after.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to thank you all. We're going to wrap it up there. I think that was a great discussion. I feel enlightened. I think we've got some exciting things to look forward to. I'm very pleased to hear about the growth all of you experienced, and I'm sure this year is going to be something else. And we really have taken, the debate, I think, a little bit out of the bubble territory into, you know, what is the real use case? And I want to thank you all for helping us to come to that realization and for joining us. So G, Gianluca, Marius, and Sean, thanks very much for joining. And to our listeners and people who've been watching, thanks. Sorry we couldn't get to all the questions. I will go through them and I will try and answer them to the best of my ability. But for now, goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.